Welcome to the Apple Digital Campus Podcast.
My name is Cole Campolice. I'm a member of the Apple Digital Campus Exchange from Penn State University, and I have the pleasure of being joined this morning by James Hilt and Len Johnson from the University of Michigan. Morning, guys.
Morning.
Morning.
Hey, before we get started, it'd be great if you could let us know a little bit about who you are on campus, what your backgrounds are, where you come from. So, Len, maybe you could let us know a little bit about that.
Yes, I'm the Director of Dental Informatics at the School of Dentistry, and I've been in healthcare education for over 15 years. Been at the University of Michigan for about three, and before that I was at the University of Iowa where I got my doctorate in learning technologies.
And I'm the Associate Provost for Academic Information and Instructional Technology Affairs, which is the closest thing we sort of have to a CIO.
Okay.
And I'm also the Interim University Librarian right now, and I'm a Professor of Psychology and have been at Michigan since 1985.
Really? So you wear a lot of hats at the university then?
Right now.
Well, that's great. Hey, you know, the one thing that we really wanted to talk to you about is this iTunes project that you have going on at the dental school. It's gotten so much press, and it's really pretty impressive what's been going on there. Maybe you guys could talk to us a little bit about what that project's all about, maybe how it got started. And
sure. This is really a very cool project from my perspective. It all started with a dental student about 2 weeks into class, first-year dental student, walking into my office saying, I think we should videotape all the lectures and stream them. And I just swallowed hard because I could just see the dollar signs of what that would cost. So instead, I said, how about if we run a pilot and see if videotaping is what you really want?
Interesting.
So he was the lead. He put together a student advisory group, and they decided that there would be three forms of media that we would try. We would do the video and stream it, and we would just offer audio downloads, and then we'd have PowerPoint synced with the audio. And so we did that for 2 weeks. They picked the class that they thought would be the most beneficial. Mm-hmm. And then we did some focus groups afterwards and some surveys, and we looked at server logs. And it was over 60% of the usage was the audio-only files.
Really?
And the PowerPoint synced to video, or PowerPoint synced to audio, and the video were about 20 or under. So we knew audio is what they wanted. And what they really liked was the mobility.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't tied to their computer. They weren't tied to the classroom. They could go wherever they had an MP3 player, an iPod, etc.
So it was really not exactly a distance education model, but something to really support what was happening on campus.
Exactly.
You know, a lot of administrators and faculty have said things like, if we give them all their audio files and the PowerPoints and everything else, are they going to come to class? Are they going to still be a part of the experience? In your experience, have you noticed that the students are still coming, they're just taking things with them and extending what's going on?
I've heard no complaints from faculty about class attendance going on. In the coming year, we're going to be conducting a summative evaluation to see if there's a learning impact or an impact on what's happening in the classroom. That's right now in the IRB process.
Really?
But so I also, there's another response to that too, which is, you know, if the only thing that students are getting out of the class is are the PowerPoint slides and the audio, then we should quit doing it. I mean, not we should quit podcasting. We should quit teaching.
That's
that,
right.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. If the only thing that draws people to classes is access to information, there are lots more efficient ways to get information to people. What we want to try to do is to find ways so that the classroom becomes more about knowledge navigation. Mm-hmm. It's about how you make meaning. And that's what faculty, you know, really good faculty, are excellent at doing, is not just giving you information, but helping you think through things in different ways. And a lot of things that aren't captured in the audio, which doesn't diminish the importance and the usefulness that the students find of being able to go back and review the lectures.
Right.
But it doesn't replace in the moment.
Absolutely. And we've made that clear from the beginning, and even the students, if you talk to the students, they'll say, you have to go to class. That's the foundation of learning. Mm-hmm. That's where you get to ask questions and be interactive and have discussions. You can't do that with your iPod.
So then it's asking faculty to do something a little bit differently as well. I mean, you're asking them to stop being sort of the sage on the stage all the time, and I'll borrow something from the dean of the school where I'm at Penn State, and sort of step over and be the guide on the side, sort of help them navigate through what's going on and things like that. Have you done a lot of faculty development? Have you talked with faculty a lot about, How do you do that? How do you make that transformation from I'm the person with all the knowledge and I'm just going to lay it out to you with some PowerPoint and walk away? I mean, do you engage in those kinds of activities?
Sure. It's a constant evolution. I mean, there's not the faculty. The faculty are thousands of people on our campus. Mm-hmm. So what we try to do is to provide an enabling infrastructure that allows faculty to experiment. One of the things that I think the most efficient way to get that transformation to happen is for faculty to, in fact, lead faculty through it. A faculty member who comes in and tells somebody else, boy, I just tried this, and it's really neat, it works great, has far more credibility yeah. than an administrator coming and saying that, mm-hmm. or even than an IT support person has, although mm-hmm. the role of IT support is critical in this. I mean, one of the things that we also see going on campus is really a transformation in the roles that sort of traditional IT support people play. You know, if you look out to the future and you say, what's the future for system administrators? It's pretty mundane and declining because of the way IT is commoditizing and because more and more stuff is moving up in the stack. So one of the questions that we sort of consistently ask is, where do IT resources add value? What's the strategic advantage in providing some particular service? And increasingly, we think that's going to be in providing IT support very close to the end users who are familiar with the discipline, know the challenges that the students and the faculty face, and can help with that transition.
So teaching and learning with technology support becomes even more critical than maybe what it means to plug into this router and things of that nature, where it has been traditionally.
Yeah, and on the good side, that's a whole lot more interesting question.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, it's an easier way to engage, I think, both IT folks and faculty and students.
So with that in mind, you know, you've looked at this podcasting thing, and we've seen it for, geez, maybe a year, maybe a little bit more of a year. It's sort of been on the radar scope, and it's happened so fast, and you guys sort of got on this very quickly. What was it that made you feel as though this was a significant investment, something that was really important for you to do, to latch on? Because there have been emerging technologies that have supposed to have revolutionized the classroom for literally decades. What it is about this that made you invest so heavily in trying something like this?
I think it evolved. We didn't say, oh, look, podcasting, that's cool, and let's use it. As I spoke earlier, we did a small research study, and we found out that mobile audio is what the students wanted, and then we looked for what's the best way to deliver it. And they're the ones who said, hey, there's this new thing, let's try it, called podcasting. They're the ones who said, we don't want just the audio files up there that we download one at a time. We want to subscribe. It was their idea.
So you're saying they, you're talking about the students?
The students. Oh, this is very student-driven and student-initiated and student-supported. It was up to them to make it happen.
And it's prototypical of the way I see increasingly new technologies rolling in. One of the concepts that we try to embrace at Michigan is creating an ecology of experimentation. So, again, we want a robust infrastructure, the tools that allow people to experiment, but, in fact, we've moved away, for the most part, from the sort of traditional IT producer push model. Boy, we'll build this technology and they will come. Instead, what we try to do is to provide the tools that people can experiment with and then be positioned to support when you have a successful experiment. Then the question is, how do you scale it up? And it's a very different model from just saying, boy, you know, because in fact, if we'd done it as producer push, we would have gone with videotaping all the lectures, because I think before we did the assessment, the bet would have been, well, of course, they're going to want the whole videos.
Yeah.
And in hindsight, it's one of those aha moments where you go, well, of course they don't. They can get to the PowerPoint slides through the course management system. What they need is, again, the mobility. They want to be able to take it around, and while they're running or while they're driving, they want to be able to listen to the lecture again.
Yeah, with that in mind, you know, I read this great quote in one of the press releases, and I thought I'd share it with you guys. But I saw this. I guess I'm the Richard Simmons of the academic world. They're all sweating to the oldies. One of the faculty members at the dentistry school said that. And that's a really interesting quote, that you have faculty sort of embracing this and seeing it in a different model. Mm-hmm. That's impressive.
And he's a very unusual faculty member. He's pretty wonderful. He was the very first one who was willing to try it. The students approached him, and he said yes. And he never thought that somebody would be working out, listening to his biochemistry lecture.
Well, I think a lot of faculty would be surprised mm-hmm. at how much students would take advantage of things if they would open it up to them. How open were faculty to getting involved in this thing? I mean, as an administrator, I ask faculty mm-hmm. to do that, and on my campus I get a lot of, whoa, 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 whoa. You know, I don't know if I can engage in that kind of activity.
Well, again, this was a student project. I was just this person behind the screen helping facilitate things. They're the ones who approached the faculty, and not a single faculty member said no.
To a student. That right there is a great sort of lesson to take away if you're trying to do something like this on another campus, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Because I know when I teach, if a student comes to me and asks me to do something, it's a whole different environment, a whole different ballgame for me than if my dean comes and says, you must do it this way. So mm-hmm. that's really pretty interesting. So then you guys have gotten a lot of press on this, but then there's this Duke thing that happened a while back. Now, I know it's a very different project, but because they both have that pod word in it, people sort of probably pull them together. How is this different than Duke's sort of freshman experience, their iPod thing?
What Duke did is supply the technology and say, how can it be used in teaching and learning? So they, from my perspective, they had a solution, and then they went looking for the instructional problem, where we took it the opposite. As you were talking about emerging, we started with the instructional problem and went looking for the solution. And it was a three-step series of pilots we did, and by the third one, here we are with podcasting and the lectures. So we took a research-based approach mm-hmm. and found the technology solution, just 180 degrees from what Duke did.
Yeah, both successful projects, but just a different perspective, mm-hmm. a different approach. Mm-hmm. So you've talked a lot about assessment, and maybe we should go back to that just for a minute, because you say it's a research-based project, and I would encourage others who are going to do this to do that. So talk a little bit more about what you thought you were going to see and what you actually saw through your assessment process.
Well, I think we've talked about the very first lesson,
right.
That what the face validity said video is what people want and should have, mm-hmm. and turned out that is not what they wanted and not what they needed. So that was a very formative, definitely very formative. And from there, we then looked at what was the best way to acquire the audio, and then what was the best way to deliver it. And we did look at just downloading individually or podcasting, and students, we just went with server logs and mm-hmm. focus groups and survey results at each step of the way to see what was actually being used and what they said they preferred, and that's where we ended up where we are. And one other point I want to make, it doesn't quite fit in the assessment question, is the students who are the ones who are responsible for doing the recording now. Hmm. We have written some automator scripts, and they, at the beginning of the lecture, they say start recording, and everything from the PA, everything that comes out of the mixer in the lecture hall, goes into a machine. At the end of the lecture, the students say stop recording, they enter the metadata, and 4 minutes later, it's posted.
So it is a student-driven end-to-end.
Absolutely.
So it's not as if every class is being recorded unless a student actually says, hey, this is something that I may want to have at a later time.
Right.
So what is that technology that's sort of sitting in the room? Because, I mean, I look online and I see these systems, and they're, you know, $20,000, $25,000 for recording solutions.
No, we have an EMAC in the classroom. It's an EMAC, and we feed the audio into that. And then we go to a Mac Mini in one of our communications closets, and then it goes to an iTunes server.
No kidding.
That's it. It's very simple.
It's really pretty amazing. The other thing that's stunning is the amount of staff time in the early phase of the project to the mm-hmm. amount of staff time that's now done to support mm-hmm. the students. So it was originally
like 20 hours a week,
and it's currently
15 minutes.
Are you kidding me?
A week. And we've tripled the amount of content we're doing.
No kidding. So you get these recordings, they get moved in, mm-hmm. and then you're working with Apple sort of in this collaborative partnership to do mm-hmm. sort of an iTunes store
for the materials. That works. And again, we're taking that same research approach with focus groups and surveys with the students and looking at data. We ask a question, how mm-hmm. is this working? We go back to them. We say, let's try this. We're best led by what they say they want. And they say is, oh, don't bother with that. That's a lot of work, and we really don't need it.
Interesting. So now your assessment models, are you going to move over and start to take a look at, is this impacting learning? I mean,
we took a look last spring and just sort of an eyeball look at test scores, and between the year before podcasting and now with, test scores remain the same.
They remain the same.
So they haven't gone one way or the other. They were basically the same. But what I really want to investigate is, can we change the environment of the classroom? So we're going to get some baseline data on that, and then we're going to see if we can start making some changes, some evolutionary changes, working with students and faculty to change the environment to make it better.
And not just in the classroom, but out of the classroom. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is this
good point. Yeah.
Sort of interesting tension. So podcasting probably doesn't do directly in the classroom much to remove the sage on the stage model.
Right.
If anything, it plays to that model. But what it allows you to do then, though, is extend that environment out into other places. So dentistry students can now meet in the library, for example, mm-hmm. and they can review the podcast if they want. They can have debates about what the professor meant. They can then email the professor and say, what did you mean? Mm-hmm. So I actually think that it doesn't, for what people typically think of as traditional classroom time, it's not necessarily a disruptive force there.
Right.
Where it's disruptive is in everything else that happens around it.
It's sort of taking the classroom across campus,
right,
or to wherever
right.
it may be.
Right.
Yeah.
One small anecdote that was related to me was a group of students who were studying for a class, and they put their PowerPoint up on their plasma TV, and they were playing back the podcast and interpreting the histology slides on the plasma with what the faculty member was saying.
Yeah.
So they are using it in ways I never studied like that.
No. So they're almost they can experience class over and over and over again to really get to the small details of what's going on.
Right. And again, mm-hmm. when you try to get to the difference between access to information and knowledge, right? To get to knowledge, you actually have to make meaning out of the information that you have. And you usually do that in collaboration. And what's great is the more students do that. I often have students in my classes say, you know, I studied for the exam. You know, and I say, and I didn't do very well on it. And I say, well, what did you do? And they say, well, I read the material and I read the notes. And I go, well, okay,
yeah.
That's a good beginning.
Yeah.
But having students mm-hmm. engage in that kind of interactive review of lectures and materials is terrific.
Yeah, that's just something, I mean, that I just never had an opportunity to do. And many faculty members, I remember being in school and graduate school and things, they didn't want you recording things a lot of times. And, you know, I think a lot of us who have been involved in the creation of e-learning materials have run up against the whole copyright question
right.
and the intellectual property question. Right. And James, I know you've done a lot of work in that area. What are some of the perspectives that you've gained from sort of your work in the past and where you're going with this?
So a couple of from the really broad thought to the really specific thought. Starting with the specific, again, to underscore what makes this project appetizing for faculty is that it is student driven. It is hard to look into the eyes of a student and say no.
Yeah.
And it's easy to look in the eyes of an administrator and say no.
Yeah.
Just sort of a very pragmatic lesson. But, you know, there's this bigger issue on campuses right now. There's an awful lot of intellectual property is in the air everywhere, whether it's who owns faculty works or who owns student works mm-hmm. or who owns collaborative works or does the library have the right to make a digital copy of the contents of its collections. And, you know, we actually have what we've been trying to do at Michigan is to engage in as many conversations around intellectual property or the whole notion of intellectual property as possible, with the fundamental belief that universities are environments that are built specifically to encourage the sharing of ideas.
Yeah.
And one of the concerns that I have is that as the broader culture tries to make ideas and expression pure property, just like owning a car. You know, an idea and an expression isn't like a car. If somebody steals my car, I can't use my car. Now, if somebody steals my idea or my expression, I can still use it. There's still some notion of property in there, but it's a different kind of property. John Perry Barlow talks about that difference sort of all the time. So what I worry about is you have a popular culture out there that is increasingly seeing ideas as pure property. Mm-hmm. And if everybody within the university decides that protecting their intellectual property is job number one, we're done.
Yeah.
You can't have a university where everybody in this model do an experiment, do a pilot, see how it works, and then if the demand is there, which it's clearly there, start to figure out how you roll it out as a production service enterprise-wide. Mm-hmm. So we've got some work to do on authentication. We've got work to do, but it doesn't look insurmountable. And the demand is clear. So I would be surprised if we don't have the capability enterprise-wide, maybe by winter term, and if not, then certainly by the next academic year.
I'd like to check in with you when we get to that, because we'd like to do something similar at Penn State. So, you know, what are some of the big lessons then, the takeaways that maybe you could share with some of the people listening to the podcast about, you know, I mean, we've talked about the value of sort of doing the research up front, looking at it as an experiment, and then following through and things like that. But any other big lessons learned?
I think the other big lesson learned is involve the client from the very beginning and listen to the client, who in this case were the students. They're very active. They're very proud of their work. Hmm. They're going to be presenting at national meetings, and they're doing it. So I think that's a big lesson learned.
Really engage the students.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I would say it's the power of demand pull.
Yeah.
Right? It really is a different way of thinking about how you roll out IT support, and it's phenomenally compelling when you have one of these experiments hit.
So do you see this happening more than sort of this commercial product service? Like iTunes is not, I mean, when it was originally designed, it was this great place to store your own music, hopefully your own music, right? And then they sort of introduced this store where you could purchase things. Now it's being used in this whole different environment where faculty are allowing their material to flow in and students are pulling from there. Do you see other companies sort of stepping into this space, or is this sort of a unique opportunity that you've seen?
So I think technology is full of unintended consequences and opportunities. So I think this is a great example of that. I would be surprised if we didn't see more of this with all sorts of emerging technologies.
Really? Do you see integration between things like this and Sakai and other open source tools that are hitting our space?
Obviously, we're at Michigan. Yeah. We're really interested. And like one point that's worth noting is that currently, when students get to correct me if I'm wrong, when students get to the podcast, they do it through a sort of combination of the course management system and an iTunes front.
No, they don't need the course. They go.
I thought they did that for the authentication part.
Nope.
Well, see, what do I know? We'd like it to be that way.
Well,
that whole enterprise space.
Like you said, as you move up the stack, we'll be fine. That's right. Pull it together.
I mean, they use the enterprise authentication, but they don't go through the course management.
So they just log right into iTunes and they...
They log into the enterprise authentication.
Oh, okay.
And then they go... It's handed off to iTunes.
All right. Well, that's some good stuff. I'll tell you what, I can't even believe that you guys have pulled this off so quickly. And I'd like to thank you both, unless there's anything else you'd like to add. James,
it's
been a pleasure talking with you today. And I'd encourage our listeners to head out to the Apple Digital Campus Exchange, maybe continue the conversation with us. Thanks again.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
The Apple Digital Campus podcast is a series of discussions on the ways that technology is influencing higher education today and into the future. If you would like to join the conversation, we invite you to become a member of the Apple Digital Campus Exchange online community at apple.com/education/ADCE.